25% of CEOs are concerned about the impact that remote working is having on their culture. 72% of hybrid working employees feel disconnected from their culture. Many of the CEOs I speak to are saying, how do we get more people into the office? And the answer is be more intentional about not forcing people back into the office, but be more intentional about building hybrid working so that people want to be connected and feel connected.
People want to work from home and they want to be more connected. What are you seeing are solutions? I mean, I think you would say, first of all, is you have to accept that that's the reality.
Welcome to another episode of Team Anywhere, where we offer proven approaches and solutions to your most critical hybrid leadership challenges.
I'm your co-host on the West Coast of California, Mitch Simon.
And I'm your co-host on the Iberian Peninsula, Brett Putter.
And we invite you to join us to Team Anywhere.
Hey, Mitch, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Good afternoon. It's a Friday when we're recording. What are you up to this weekend in Portugal, Brett?
I'm not exactly sure because I've got two little children who have had challenging stomachs, is the best way to describe it, over the last couple of days. So I'm hoping that by the end, by tomorrow, they're going to be fighting fit and ready to go. But the weather is supposed to be good. So if everything goes according to plan, we'll end up on the beach.
Oh, that sounds fun. Yeah, I'm flying to the exciting city of Sacramento to, it's like, most people are like, where is that? It's actually the capital of the great state of California, to watch my youngest son play volleyball for the University of Oregon. So I'm really excited about that. Yeah. So what do we got going today?
I was kind of thinking about this. You know, there's a lot of talk about what I see as what's not going well in kind of flexible working, hybrid working. You keep hearing about CEOs who want you in people in the office more, and you keep hearing about this argument that it's not the connection's not there and the culture's disconnecting. And so I thought it might be worthwhile having a look at that for a little bit and talking about that. But also, there's some interesting data coming out of companies that actually are doing this really well. And I thought it'd be good to just explore that side of it.
All right. So let's explore today, what companies are doing well in this virtual hybrid space. I know that I just came off of, Brett, an assignment where we were looking at quarterly engagement scores, QES, for this company. And there were, you can tell this company is 100% virtual, and there were a lot of things that were showing up. Having been a virtual company for 3-4 years and starting to, see challenges in the culture.
Yeah, there's different companies and different organizations have done research on that, but I think it's Founders Forum said that 25% of CEOs are concerned about the impact that remote working is having on their culture. And if I remember correctly, Gartner said that 72% of hybrid working employees feel disconnected from their culture. So there are these strong negative headwinds, but on the other side, there are these companies that are actually doing really, really great work. And you can see it in their data, you can see it in some of the results they're getting. And I just think it'll be worthwhile looking at one or two of these. I don't know if you've so I've been following Atlassian for a long time, and they're a company that have done great things, but they're actually a collaboration-based company. They sell collaborative solutions. So I would almost expect them to be ahead of the pack. So it's nice to look at companies that aren't necessarily in the collaboration space and see what they're doing. I don't know what have you seen on your side in this area? Are you getting any positive headwinds from some of the clients you're speaking to about the positives of hybrid work?
What I'm always getting on the positive of hybrid work, and we see it in the articles we've been reading, is the ability to attract talent from anywhere. So those companies that are diving in headfirst are finding that, they can get people actually sometimes to work for less money, because of the socioeconomic circumstance of the places that they're hiring. But in general, they can just get workers, better workers that they wouldn't be able to find otherwise. I also find, you know, a lot of the work that I do, what I find is that the, you know, when you talk about diversity, right, there's definitely there's diversity of, you know, ethnic and racial diversity, which is important. I'm also finding the diversity of human beings. So in many of the companies that I work with where it's very much a sales oriented culture. So let's say 2/3 of the people that are working in the company are in sales or supporting sales. I think everybody else actually is supporting sales, but not directly in sales. What we're finding is that we're getting people who are just very entrepreneurial. So that kind of, you know, you and I do a lot of coaching and development, and we're, you know, you want people that are entrepreneurial, but sometimes, you know, when you're hiring 22-year-olds, 23-year-olds that haven't really had that sense of any entrepreneurship in their life, they actually, you need to teach them to be entrepreneurial. Well, by, let's say, choosing someone who wants to live in Idaho, for crying out loud, we're getting people that that actually have a side gig, that actually are, you know, my husband and I, or my wife and I, or my German Shepherd and I moved here so we can be, you know, in this cozy environment where we can actually buy a house. You know, being in California, that's very, very difficult. And they're bringing to the table that, you know, do or die mentality that you might not get, if you limit yourself to hiring in a small area.
Yeah. So I think talking to my clients, the companies who are being intentional, I think, around solving some of the challenges that are coming up. I think these are the companies that are the ones that are, and I'm, when I say intentional, I mean this is more of a strategic rather than a tactical level. So strategically approaching hybrid, and for example, focusing on connection or focusing on well-being. I think these companies, the companies that are being very intentional, are the ones who are getting better results and are getting better engagement scores and so on. I think I sent you that article talking about, for example, a company called Synchrony. They're a huge financial services firm, and they did a survey a while back, and they found that 85% of their workforce wanted remote work. And so they didn't ignore that. They then went and built a policy around that, and they built a strategy around connectedness, connection. And it encourage, you know, they allow people to work in a flexible way, which they support their employees to work when and where they are most effective. They've redesigned their physical space to foster more purposeful collaboration. And they've developed and or using new tools to accommodate better hybrid meetings. And they've developed, you know, the this capability in their organization to be less us versus them or second class citizen if we're in the office and you're not. And so you can see, you know, you can see the results. They've had double the number of people come into their headquarters since they started working on this intentionally. And this is huge, because many of the CEOs I speak to are saying, how do we get more people into the office? And the answer is be more intentional about not forcing people back into the office, but be more intentional about building hybrid working so that people want to be connected and feel connected.
So you know what's so interesting about what you said, Brett, is people, you said in the same breath, actually, people want to work from home and they want to be more connected. And what I think is that's, you know, so first of all, so your workers are telling you how to make them happy. On the other hand, that's the conundrum is, well, wait a minute. If I'm hearing connected, I'm hearing we all need to be in the office connected, holding hands, singing kumbaya. And in fact, what you're saying is true. I want to feel connected and I want to be in Idaho. So what are you seeing are solutions? I mean, I think you would say, first of all, is you have to accept that that's the reality.
Yeah, exactly. I think if you accept that that's the reality, and then you go and say, okay, how do we work around this? So connectedness is not only making sure people are talking to one another, people are interacting. Connectedness happens from the structure you give your hybrid organization. Because if the structures are in place and the processes are in place that make work effective, then I feel more connected to the people I'm working with anyway, because it's fluid, it's happening easily, we are collaborating effectively, versus we need to get people into the office more. It's actually the way your hybrid operating system operates is where the connection comes from. It's not from people seeing one another more. And I think this is one of the key aspects that a lot of leaders are missing out on. They think that if we get people into the office, they're going to be connected. And they're not. Just because people in the office doesn't mean osmosis is going to happen. As a matter of fact, if you're in the office 3 days a week, you just don't have enough time. You're in meetings, you're running around, you're trying to get stuff done. So you can be out of the office on Mondays and Fridays. So there's no time for, you know, random fabulous meetings in the corridor because I'm actually on my headphones anyway on a call.
So one of the things that Synchrony is creating is they're very, very conscious of the let's say the geography, the space, the design, the way they're creating big rooms, small rooms, medium-sized rooms, cushy environments where people are actually encouraged to actually get together and talk. Outside of construction, what are some of the things that you're hearing people are doing to build that connectivity? And what type of processes are building that connectivity?
If you think about how we used to manage in the office, we didn't necessarily do regular one-to-ones. We did them, but maybe we did them once a month or once every 6 weeks or once a quarter, because you knew what was happening. You saw everybody every day. Now, you may or may not see everybody. You may be working more. Well, you are working more remote, so you don't interact. You don't see. There's no physical presence. So what I'm seeing hybrid companies do is learn from remote work companies. And so remote work companies do regular one-to-one meetings, weekly one-to-one meetings. And that builds the connectivity and trust between you and your manager. If I'm speaking to you every week about you and how things are going, not necessarily about your performance, not necessarily about your numbers, but I'm listening to you and understanding how you are and how your family is as part of that and getting to know you, we have connectivity. And then as the manager, I am the fulcrum. I am the center point of that connectivity. And I can then be better at building that social connection and social capital across the team. So I'm seeing what I'm seeing is at a manager level, the manager's coming in and going, okay, let me get to know my people. And then if I know my people, I can connect them better internally within the team. And then I can connect them better externally outside of the team.
Yeah, it's one of the tools we actually created a couple years back because of hybrid, which was, we're talking, let's just the practicality of it, which is, first of all, yes, one-on-ones. One-on-ones are critical. They're necessary. And I don't think you can have that connectivity. We had issues with not having one-on-ones before virtual work. And of course, we still have the issues and I just don't get it. It's kind of like the husband and wife where the husband says, hey, you know, every Wednesday we're going to go out. And then just doesn't. And what type of relationship would you actually have with your wife at that point? We actually took a spreadsheet. And so there's Joe, you know, and, you know, where does Joe live? What's his living situation? What does Joe really care about? What is he really passionate about? What is Joe struggling with right now? What are his absolute strengths? What what does he want to achieve, and what types of, especially what types of projects does he really want to take on, and where does he want to go, and how quickly does he want to get there? Because then you have this kind of like this menu of when projects come up, you're like, oh, I'm going to give that to Joe, or I'm going to give that to Lisa, or Joe hates to do this. So if I'm giving Joe this work all the time, then Joe's going to be pretty miserable. So yeah, I love the, there's more of a responsibility on the manager. I don't know if there's more of a responsibility or that responsibility is still the same for the manager to really know his people. And more than that is that the employee feels seen. I mean, that's the most important thing, is that he or she feels seen by somebody over time. Hey, we're taking a quick break to remind you to support our podcast by hitting the subscribe button and leaving us a review. Your feedback means the world to us, and it helps us continue to bring you more engaging and thought-provoking content for leadership and remote work.
Yeah, so this is really interesting. In the course that we've developed as part of the program, we talk about physical proximity and emotional proximity.
Okay.
And so physical proximity, when you see somebody and they're there and they're in the room with you. And physical proximity is good, but actually in a remote or a hybrid work environment or environment where people are distributed, the emotional proximity of being seen, of being heard, being understood, builds that connection. And you can actually use emotional proximity to overcome the lack of physical proximity. And the way really good managers do this is they focus on moments that matter. And so they will call out moments that matter. Somebody, maybe an example is birthday, or it's somebody did some really great work on a project, or somebody closed a great deal. It's a moment that matters to that person. And so they will call it out, and they will build on the moment that matters. And that connects, that creates that emotional proximity that we need, actually more than the physical proximity. And this is one way that smart managers do to overcome that lack of physical proximity of being in an office.
It's so interesting. It was Kenneth Blanchard's 1 Minute Manager book that was written, I think, in the 70s. So Kenneth Blanchard is, I'm here in San Diego. He was the, he created situational awareness and also the 1 Minute Manager, and also authored probably hundreds of books. And this is, of course, the day when you suit up with your suspenders and go to work every single day. And he would mention that you want to catch people doing the right thing. Now, you can't catch people doing the right thing because you're not with them. However, what you can do is, in more than an attaboy, right? Oh, Brett, it's your birthday. Hey, happy birthday. See ya. You can really, I'm thinking emotional proximity has much more to do with how you're actually connecting with a person, right? So give me some examples where people would actually be seen and heard through emotional proximity.
It's the manager's job to really keep their ear to the ground and to be trying to hear from the rest of the team. This is where these one-to-ones are so important. So if one of the team members mentioned that Max did this awesome job for them, or Max did this great work on the client, then that's a moment that matters not only for Max, but for the person you're speaking to and for the person you're having the one-to-one with. And then if you call that out at the meeting, it's recognition that Max wasn't expecting. And it's for the person who you as the manager were doing the one-to-one with, it is showing that you were listening and you're reinforcing that great message. So that's where the moment that matter actually is a double whammy there. It's both at the person you were doing the one-to-one with and for Max, who was mentioned during the one-to-one. And that becomes a small moment that matters for the one-to-one person, because you were listening, you were taking note, you were aware of what was important. And so that moment that matter can be enhanced by the manager going, Max, tell us about what happened there. And then talking about, if the manager's got it in the back of their head, talking about the company value that Max reinforced, and the way Max is like living the culture and congratulating him and recognizing him for that, that becomes a moment that matter, because recognition is doesn't happen as easily in this remote setting, in this distributed setting. And so recognition becomes even more important. I think that's a really good example.
I think it's a fantastic example of emotional proximity, and I think it's amazing what we're saying here is that it's really important for the manager during the one-on-ones to hear, actually, to listen to Joe, and also pull out from Joe who else in the company or who else on the team is actually doing really, really well. And then to call that person out. So what I'm hearing is one of the most important things you can do for emotional proximity is to start to listen to the greatness of the people that work for you and the greatness of the people that work with you. It's a different type of an ear. And I don't think that is actually pretty revolutionary, because I've never really heard it that way.
What I do when I talk to managers or leaders is build a sort of set of questions for them. Listen to their natural persona. And I've got a list of 30 or 40 questions, and I'll say, here's a list of 15 to 20 questions that over the next 6 to 8 months you should drop into your one-to-ones to get to know your people better. And that is it's not just about the individual, it's about saying, who are you working well with? We built this in one of the modules in our program. We built this social capital index, where we give the managers a tool to evaluate the social capital of their team, both internally and externally. So how is your team doing from a social capital point of view internally, and where do we need to work? What do we need to do? And externally, are you just talking to product, but you're not talking to anybody in marketing, and you've never spoken to anybody in sales? Okay, I need to change that. I need to get you talking to people in sales. So the manager now understands the importance of social capital, which is the value. It's a value you get from knowing somebody, but it's more important how well they know you. It's how well are you known? So the people who build the best social capital are memorable for what they say and who they are and what they deliver for the people on the other side. It's not just about building the connection.
It goes back to a conversation you and I might have had a while ago, which is, okay, I want to not commute to work every day. I want to live in Idaho or Iowa or Ohio or Alaska. God forbid. And I want to be connected to. I want people to connect to me. And what you're saying is nice. To really be successful, first of all, as a manager, is you want to really build social capital. So you want to get your team out there. As known as, doers and creators and makers. And what you're also saying is it's really important that, the greatest way for you to be a connector is to really be proactive and know what everyone else is doing, right? So then you can go out there and you can go, Jane, I totally appreciate you. And, Max, I really appreciate you, and Mary, and these are the things. So actually, the way you can win is to go out there, whether you're a leader or a team member, and find out what great people are doing in your department and outside your department. Now, that's going to take a little bit more work, but man, are you going to be an incredible connector and a connectee, if that's a word, in this. So you're really, gosh, Brett, you're really, we're taking what's kind of normal, like, people should go around and say thank you and appreciate each other. What you're saying, though, is in a virtual environment, you can actually still be even more connected It's just you need to take those steps.
Yeah, it's about that intentionality. If that article that I shared with you, and I think we'll put it in the show notes. But you know, whether it's Nationwide or whether it was ServiceNow, there is an intentionality about it. And so giving your manager, because managers are used to managing in an office-based environment. They didn't have to think about this stuff. Why would I think about this? Our social capital was okay because people were going to the bar and having a drink, or going for lunch, or meeting for a coffee, or bumping into one another in the. So now, when it's not happening, and just because you're going into the office twice a week or three times a week, it doesn't mean it's happening. You know, it doesn't mean that social capital is building and osmosis is doing its thing. So it's about that intentionality, and combining, understanding that emotional proximity, that concept of being emotionally connected to somebody, you can actually overcome the loss of physical proximity and be connected in a more meaningful way emotionally through moments that matter.
They also, Brett, going back to the husband and wife team, is absence does make the heart grow fonder. The combination, you know, I think we could round out this conversation today. I definitely want to dive into social capital again. So, you know, next episode, let's really dive into social capital. This is a huge, huge area that I do think is landmark.
There's even a theory for social. There's the social capital theory.
What is the social? Okay, tell us. What is the social capital theory?
I'm not going to tell you because okay. Well, we can.
We're going to talk about it next time. So my thought.
It's a cliffhanger.
Is the hybrid situation where you're coming together, whether it's once a week or once a month or once a quarter, combined with the social capital that you're creating, you know, in the virtual space, I think is perfect. Because, you know, you get tired of the guy who's wearing the same blue shirt every day, right? And when you see him, you know, he's in his element at his house. He's got his kids around and his dogs and his cats. And you're learning about him, and then you get to see him or her after all that time. I think it's perfect because it's real, right? It's real. We, you know, anyone who was working in the, you know, the 90s and the zeros and the 10s, you know, we all knew that you spent more time physically with these people than you did with your family. And that's really changing. We're kind of going back to the agrarian days where you spent most of your time with your family. You know, you spent most of your time at home. And I do think for a lot of people, then that works for them. For others, no. Others actually want to be in the office more. And that's great for them as well. But I do think that it's really important that with all of this, that you're definitely looking for those moments to really learn about the people that you work with and find those moments to really appreciate and demonstrate gratitude.
Yeah, it's always good to back something up with a little bit of data. There's a BCG report called Joy at Work Matters More Than You Think. And they found in the research that companies with team-driven hybrid models perform better than their peers across key business metrics. Companies that allow employees to work remotely some days and require them to be in the office, so that typical mandated hybrid work, grew twice as fast from 2020 to 2022 as firms that require their employees to always work in the office.
All right, we've got to delve deeper into social capital and that BCG study on joy at work when we meet next time. Brett, this was fantastic. We've been talking about this for a long time to actually get this thing kicked off. I've had a good time. And I really challenge all of our listeners to come up with processes where you are definitely spending time learning about each one of your employees or each one of your team members, and also looking for ways where you can find who is benefiting these team members, so you can actually demonstrate some gratitude and appreciation for them as well.
I think that's a great first step for our audience. I think the second step for our listeners is, if they have questions that they would like us to answer, questions around hybrid work, remote first work, remote work, mandated work, you know, they can either email you or me. If we have an answer, we'll honestly tell them that we have an answer. If we don't have an answer, we'll try and find an answer. Definitely, if audience members have questions, please don't hesitate to shoot us. And if what we're talking about is making you think stuff up or is making you come up with ideas, then let us know as well. You know, if some of this is going well for you, let us know about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We want to be able to report back on the good and the bad, not just the bad side of this. We're early days in this journey. Mitch, I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too, Brett. Have fun with your kids. Hopefully they get better there in Portugal. We'll look forward to seeing you next time on our next episode of Team Anywhere. Before we sign off for today, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Your support helps us grow, and by subscribing, you'll be the first to know when our exciting next episode is available.